Good afternoon, and this is the Dot Matrix, and I'm Sean.
And I'm Justin.
And
it's funny you said this afternoon, like, what happens if someone listens to this and it's like midnight, or it's like 2 a.m. after, or 3 o'clock in the morning.
After an infomercial?
Afternoon infomercial.
Or sex, or...
Sure, why not?
I mean, who wouldn't want to listen to us after sex?
Anyways, yes, good afternoon.
I thought, you know, they could think of a nice spring day, nice lovely afternoon, even though we haven't had that much lately.
I was going to say, it's not a nice spring day afternoon. No. It's pretty raining and drizzly outside.
But I did take an opportunity to enjoy a cappuccino at J.J. Bean today, out in the rain.
Very nice.
Not far from you, actually.
Yeah, it's not far from me at all.
Yeah. A soy decaf cappuccino.
I won't comment on that, but what time were you out there?
It was about 3:30.
I was probably just getting back to the office.
Oh, really?
Time, yeah. I was in downtown all day for a very intensive meeting. So.
Yeah, which you're very good at.
Well,
right?
It was a complex meeting, but it's actually pretty good, actually.
Productive?
It was very productive.
Well, that's good. You know what? They have to be productive, or else there's no point, because meetings suck otherwise.
Well, it's funny, because I was... You're absolutely right, but I was facilitating half of it, and my boss facilitated the morning, and then he had to go, and it's nice every so often at the end of these things, and someone comments about your facilitation skills and about how good they were, so you kind of feel...
That's nice.
You kind of feel good about yourself,
sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I actually do think I do fairly well, and I'm not, like, you know, trying to be pompous or anything, is I do, for some reason, I can kind of listen to what people are saying and try to take down notes. Like, because even in meetings, you have flip charts and stuff, and people are sort of summarizing what people are saying, and sometimes people are like, you don't get it at all. That's not what I said at all.
Right.
But when you're able to sort of document what people are saying and repeat it back to themselves so they feel like they've been heard, I think I do that pretty well, and what I was doing a little bit too today was, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen, you know how you have sticky notes, right? Post-it notes are like, you know, not more than a couple inches. Right?
Yeah.
There's big ones that are at least a foot long and big, right?
Yeah.
And you use them a lot for facilitations, and I write like one comment on one sticky, and then you put it on the wall, and then at lunch, you have like 30 different stickies, and you have to group them into where common themes are.
Yeah.
And I spent the whole lunchtime just trying to make these little... groupings and make connections where there were where I thought there were connections. I kind of felt like Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind, you know.
wasn't a bad movie.
Well, it wasn't a bad movie. Jennifer Connelly's in it, so it's by definition not a bad movie.
But we'll talk about that later. But yeah, you're right. No, but that's really cool. I didn't know they had foot long post-its, and that sounds really useful, actually.
It is actually. It is quite useful.
Because what do we do with those little ones? We have like 10 of them all next to each other. You know, I do that at work. Like, or look at this. Like, I have these. You know, look at that. It's ridiculous. I could just have one big post-it. I'm pointing at my computer right now, my iMac.
I was gonna say, please describe what that is.
Yeah. Forget. But yeah, there's. You know, I was thinking about our eventual podcast today.
Yes.
And how this has been a particularly inhumane, evil, kind of disastrous last few weeks in the world.
Yes, well...
Wouldn't you say?
Yes. Thank goodness I've been, you know, taking my 5-week-long Photoshop course so we could let these atrocities accumulate so we can talk about this one gigantic rant of a podcast, which is probably what today is going to be.
Oh. I just wish I just had this big iPad in front of us that we just point to all the different stories.
I'm a kind of a gadget guy, and I'm
sure.
But I'm usually one of those gadget guys who gets it like way later. Mm-hmm. I'm not like someone who gets it right away. Mm-hmm. But the iPad, I'm definitely
it's pretty nice, huh?
Keen on, yeah.
Yeah. Well, because you usually get like, you know, you got the Mac Mini.
Yeah.
You've got a PC.
Yeah.
So you know you know your way around different systems.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So I think for some of the stuff that you do, I don't know if it would be a total work-based, but everything else seems to be right up your alley with the iPod.
Yeah, well, especially because, I mean, I've got my iPod, and I like the iPod Classic because of the volume of stuff you can put on it.
Yeah.
So I'm not necessarily keen to move to an iPod Touch or an iPhone unless there's the massive amount of storage that you can have for music and stuff.
Right.
But, so if I keep with an iPod Classic, but have the functionality of, you know, being able to, you know, watch a movie that you've downloaded or a TV show on your couch or on your lap, or when you're watching something on TV on the couch and you want to look at something online.
Yeah.
You can have, you know, having your laptop on your lap on your couch is not fun, right?
It gets kind of tiring.
But having a little iPad sitting there, it's pretty cool. Like,
yeah.
So I could finally get the functionality of an iPod Touch while not having to sacrifice storage. So for me, there's enough of a difference between the iPad versus everything else I've got. It's, to me, I'm really intrigued by it.
Yeah.
If I had an iPod Touch or an iPhone, I'd be like, well, not so much, because it would just be a bigger size of that kind of thing. So, but yeah,
Well, I think a lot of the things that people use laptops for, they would just simply use on the iPad. Except the word processing part.
Yeah, but except that, for me, the word processing is, like, the biggest part. Like, doing Excel and words and stuff. And and if they had an app or where you could do that, that would be useful.
Well,
but they only have...
What do they have?
The Apple version, the iWorks kind of thing.
Okay.
So it's not Word, it's not Microsoft Word for Apple, for Mac.
Oh, I see, okay.
And the problem is with the iPad, like the iPod touches and stuff, you can only do, from my understanding, one application at a time.
Yeah, right.
Right, and so for me, who is a worker in my personal and professional world...
Mm.
Where I have ADHD and I need 10 different applications going on at the same time. I want my email to be there and accessible anytime I want it.
Yeah.
But I want at least 6 Word documents and 4 mm-hmm. Excel sheets working at the same time. You can't do that with the iPad.
Sure. Yeah.
It's only one thing at a time.
Right.
So
that's the screen, and you shrink and get something else. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what people were saying. Like when the Palm Pre or whatever it is came out, which is their version of the iPhone or something.
Right.
Palm's version. That's the big selling point for that, was that you can have multiple applications going on at the same time.
Cool.
So
is that like PC based though?
I think it is. Yeah.
I guess
anything other than app, is PC based.
Okay. Well, and you know, we would probably check in with your sister on this stuff, wouldn't we?
We probably would, except she's PC all the way. Except she has an iPod.
But
she's thinking about a Mac, because, you know, I am on a Mac, and so is Jonathan. And, and so her two siblings are on it, and eventually she's just going to break and become a Mac user too. But I've always said, the argument I've always said, and I'll repeat it again, is that, you know, there's nothing wrong with PCs. They're not horrible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you can get, you know, if you can spend a little bit more money and get something that doesn't break down, like if you can get a basic car, or you can get a good car that won't break down often, you won't have to replace the battery every 6 months or whatever, like, why not, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
a bit more.
For me, the big thing with PCs is when things go wrong, I have no idea what to do about it. Like, with Macs, they at least bring up something on the screen that kind of at least alludes to how to fix it.
You know,
or troubleshoot.
Well, and frankly, when something stalls... A force quit on a Mac works 99% of the time. And
it's unreal.
On a PC, you have to control, alt, delete, and that, when you do it 5 different times until it finally works, it just...
No, I hear you. That's a really, really big point, actually. But yeah, well, that's the gadget portion of our show. Hey, but that's what this is about, right? This is about you and me, just for those reminder out there, as I come closer into the mic. Sorry,
I'm
got my
morning
voice still.
Yeah, you're getting rid of your cold, so
yeah,
it's all sexy. It's all Phoebe from Friends.
I look forward to getting sick before each podcast, because it's about every 5 weeks now, right? I'm just kidding.
So you're gonna say?
Yeah, well, I was gonna say, you know, we were hinting earlier, there's big stuff going on. There's probably a bunch of things that have come and gone that we've forgotten about,
yes. Well, one thing I will talk about very, very quickly is you mentioned it to me, and I finally caught up on all my Bill Moyers podcasts, except for the one that just happened.
Right.
And you're right, on a couple of podcasts ago about religion and baseball, which is a fascinating podcast.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
he talked about, and one of my last podcasts, or one of my last broadcasts.
Yeah.
And you're right. I went to Wikipedia, which is the most accurate resource. Brilliant, but inaccurate, of course. And they said his last he announced in November that he was going to not continue.
Huh.
And his last one's on April 30th.
You know, I'll say this. If he's not doing any more reporting or investigations or any kind of journalistic duties after this, then I think the U.S. are just, you know, losing a total patriot in that sense. Like, he's a true patriot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just love, and this is what we're definitely more opinion-based, one more commentary, but he,
right.
obviously left-leaning, but he,
yeah.
he also is a Southerner, and which I think is important to point out. And he is objective as possible, even with his, like, he will question, okay, well,
right.
this is obviously what we think on the left, but he'll question that
yeah.
reasoning.
I think that's right. It's reason. Like,
yeah.
he has an opinion, it's true. He is more left-leaning. I mean, he has to be, given that he was, you know, part of the Lyndon Johnson,
mm-hmm.
you know, administration.
Mm-hmm.
It's always based on thought, based on research, based on logic, right? Which is, you have to respect that, you know?
Yeah. You do, and throw any of those Fox News guys who chastise him, and he gets back at them. Take any of those Fox News guys or anyone on the right and dare them to be the same way. Like, you know, we have the Jon Stewarts who make fun of the Fox guys or
yeah.
the right-leaning guys and women, and that's kind of his job. He's more comedic, but ask any one of those right-leaning people to be as objective and as thoughtful about even their opinions, and you wouldn't even come close to what Bill Myers does.
Well, I still, like, when I was researching about this, you know, retirement of his again, and I went to the Bill Myers website, and I always go back to that very first when he redid the journal again, as he used to do it in the 80s, and this is a rebirth of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And, one of his first guests was Jon Stewart, right? So I still go back to that interview, and I downloaded it again on my iPod because I got rid of it. I put
yeah.
it back on there because I just wanted to make sure I have it. Still fascinating discussion. And then even, like, that was 2007. And then 2003, he was, when Bill Moyers was hosting another show called Now on PBS.
Right.
He,
excuse me,
had another interview with Jon Stewart on that show as well. And got, again, a very wonderfully layered, good critique of the media and everything. Just so I still go back to those as this quintessential good conversation, you know.
Like, worth bookmarking.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Keeping in your iTunes. Or
before we get to the rant, and I want to get to one very specific thing, of
mm-hmm.
course, we know what that's about.
One yes,
thing
we
I will,
do.
One thing I will mention, because I told my friend at the office, who you've met, who goes to the gym on occasion.
Yes.
I had mentioned that I was doing a podcast, and she didn't really know I was doing a podcast, that I do a podcast.
Yeah.
And she said, you better talk about your deodorant change. And, like, yes. So I wanted to quickly mention that, because I've made a switch.
Oh,
you deodorant.
Oh, that's big. Okay.
It is big, because I determined, sort of how you and Elaine are trying to get rid of, you know, change your diet and get rid of certain things you're eating. I decided I want to be more natural in terms of my products that I, you know, put on my body, like deodorant, toothpaste, shampoo, that sort of stuff. I had always
yeah.
thought about paper products, like toilet paper, to be recycled and that sort of stuff. But I never really thought about, like, the other stuff that you put on your body that gets absorbed in some way.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And I was told from our friend Minu that, you know, there's mercury in antiperspirant, and
mm-hmm.
so if you use antiperspirant, you know, she herself was getting a bit of, you know, mercury poisoning from it. Like, she went to a naturopath and found that out, and so she started to switch to more natural products as well. And so I thought, you know, that's
right.
not a bad idea. So I tried it out. I got some. I went to Whole Foods. Well, I actually ended up getting at London Drugs a bit cheaper, but it's an all natural deodorant that I switched to,
okay.
and it's been this is my third day.
Interesting. Okay.
And I was told before that the more natural way of doing it, people in the past have, it's not another colleague at work, you apparently take a lemon and you rub a lemon under your armpits. That's another way of doing it.
A lemon?
Yes. And I'm like, why don't you have like a, you know, you, I don't know what you could have, like a cut or something, but like it might be painful.
I think it's the acidity, because lemons are good for your breath.
Oh, okay.
You know who I learned that from?
Who?
Oprah. Years
wow.
ago, she mentioned one of her first dates she ever had was with a guy who had a little issue.
A little halitosis issue?
Yeah. And she said,
lemon.
Eat lemons, and got better.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's so true. Lemon is so good for a lot of things.
So I had to quickly bring that up, sorry, just to get that out of the room.
No, that's very interesting. I think it's very important because, you know, you never know what you can learn from someone, and I just learned a new thing from you today, so that's good.
So shall we get to the big topic at hand?
The big one? We should probably go straight to the top, right?
Yes, please. I'm assuming you're thinking the same thing I am.
Oh, yeah.
We are
talking about pedophilia in the Catholic Church, baby. Yeah. Here I am, and not wanting to make this funny at all, because it's not. And that's the whole point.
Well, we talked about this a bit on the phone a few nights ago,
yeah.
and your wife, Elaine, sort of said it so aptly on Facebook the other day, and which
yeah.
a bunch of people commented on, including myself, about... I mean, there's a lot of things wrong.
Yeah.
A lot wrong. But one of the first offensive things that we both agree on
mm-hmm.
is the fact that, you know, as part of the defense of the people in the Vatican, their spokespersons and otherwise, you know, and even the Pope, I think, in one of his speech, talked about petty gossip or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so to use the term petty gossip is in itself offensive and an atrocity in itself, to say that talking about covering up pedophilia is in the same league of, as Elaine put it, the state of Sandra Bullock's marriage,
right,
is an affront to the subject matter, the severity of it,
yeah.
irrespective of whether or not it's true or not. You know, the fact that the Vatican and people in the Catholic Church are not saying, you know, it's allegations, we don't know what's happened,
yeah,
and don't even talk about that or defend it in that level,
mm-hmm.
and just say, you know, it's just petty gossip.
It's unbelievable.
You know, speaks volumes.
Well, and then, but I was also very surprised the Archbishop of Canterbury came out and said they have no, I mean, what was the quote? They have no, I should look it up.
I read the article in New York Times about it, but I forget what he said.
Yeah, like they're, it's like no credibility.
No credibility.
Left
right.
over. Sorry.
Yeah.
That was the word.
But, I mean, there. But then I guess some of that in which the critics are sort of pointing to in that comment is that, well, the Archbishop of Canterbury, which is the head of the Anglican Church,
right.
has a bit of a beef with the Catholic Church anyways around the Pope saying that he would fast-track people coming back to the Catholic faith
yeah.
from the Anglican faith, right?
So. It's true, but you know what? You need, I think you just need people at high places to tell it like it is, you know?
Right, yeah, it's true.
And, if it has to be someone who's his rival or his competitor in the big business of religion, then that I guess that's what we have to do. But for me, it's just, you know, they talk about, you know, the Vatican being the sovereign state, right?
Yes.
And he's the head of state. And they have letters where he's saying, before he was the Pope, saying, you know, we have to, you know, sweep this under the rug, essentially.
Right.
That does that not constitute as crime against humanity? Like, when you have a state that's like, it's just
oh.
you know what I mean? Like,
I never thought of that angle before. Like,
and he's a head of state, and he's not coming out right now and saying,
right,
I was wrong before. I should have paid more attention. Like, him writing a letter to the victims of. This guy in Boston, I think, and this guy in Ireland, and I think in
right.
Germany, too.
Germany is happening, yeah, it was happening.
I mean, and it's, I mean, it's been happening everywhere, right?
Yes.
I think Ireland and Germany are the latest, you know, examples of this, these atrocities.
Right.
One of the guys is dead. He's been dead for over 10 years, so, but writing a letter saying, I hope, you know, you can forgive, or whatever, like that... Of course that's not enough, you know. And you've read article after article, people coming out saying there's more
right.
to it than that, you
well,
know?
And to be frankly honest, if the Pope didn't even know about these things, that's almost irrelevant.
Oh, completely.
You know, because...
Completely.
Frankly, if I'm like a lower level employee in the civil
oh,
service of the Vatican and I get a letter...
Totally.
and I don't, in my own conscience and in the culture in which I'm living and working in, know that this is an important issue that should go up to the CEO, the
yeah.
top dog,
yeah.
then the top dog takes responsibility of the culture in which he
absolutely.
Or she, well, he, you know, fosters or nourishes within that system. So it happens to be the Catholic Church. So for me, it's just an affront to logic, and just or just not or faith to say, oh, okay, the Pope didn't know about it, so it's okay, or whatever, which is one of the quasi arguments that they're flown around. That's unacceptable too. It's sort of like why I cannot stand Joy McPhail during the days when she was Minister of Children and Family, and children were dying, and she refused to resign, to take responsibility. Children are dead.
Yeah.
Just because you didn't know about it yourself does not mean someone very high up like you should take a fall for it and
yeah.
be responsible and say, you know, fuck, that happened on my watch. This is unacceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
well,
that should also say the same thing.
It's just arrogance, right? And I totally agree. It's just, you know, the Vatican and the Pope, it's too big of a monster. How do you... I mean, the only way the Pope can go down is someone catching him with a boy. Seriously.
Yes.
Do you see any other way that this will never go to the top? I'm sorry,
and,
unfortunately.
You know, and, you know, I get it in some respects in that it's a religion. It's a religious establishment. It's the Catholic Church. And, you know, in the end, probably punishment is not the way that this is going to be solved. But there are precedents in which you can heal.
Mm-hmm.
I think about Truth and Reconciliation, the process of that in apartheid in South Africa,
right.
in Rwanda, what we're starting to do here in Canada around residential schools and First Nations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not about finding people and punishing them like an Inquisition.
Yeah.
It's about, you know...
It's actually about turning the tide.
And it's about people
yeah.
in power manning up.
Yeah.
And saying,
well, they're
fuck,
not,
we screwed
yeah.
up, and, you know, we're not perfect, and we know we've done wrong, and maybe I personally didn't do something wrong, but the system in which I'm in charge of, or my forefathers did something wrong, or my comrades, or my colleagues, or whatever, and we accept that, and let's try to give victims, and recognize, one, recognize victims, that they are victims.
Oh, absolutely.
And two, give them a chance to talk about their stories in an open process, in a respectful process, and get that out. I think that's going to be part of a healing process that I would think the values of the Catholic Church would support. But, you know, I don't know.
Well, yeah, it never adds up to that, though, does it?
No.
I mean, it's just common sense that says that should happen, but it's never about common sense. It's like, we talked about this on the phone, too. It's like, the only way that this can begin to change, too, is, like, every Catholic priest in every church in the world, every local, what is it, cathedral or church or whatever?
Congregation or whatever?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Every single one in their local community has to say, this is, you know, they have to denounce it and they have to say, this is the worst thing that can happen to young people and or anyone.
Yeah.
And if they don't do that, it just means that they're just hoping it gets swept under the rug. Like, they're just hoping it's
yeah.
just, it's not really my problem. I don't molest young boys, so I'm just not going to talk about it at my church. It's like, the only way, like, that you'll get people beyond just blind faith in these institutions, it's okay if they believe in what they believe, but it's this, the thing that gets me is this blind faith that these people are just infallible, you know?
Right.
So you have to distill that in people and say, you know, if they're already listening to you anyway... To say, this is completely wrong, I don't condone this. I don't condone what the people in the upper hierarchy of this organization does.
Right.
Or other colleagues, like, of mine. Like,
right.
these were other direct colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
That they should be openly denouncing. And if they're not doing that, that's a huge problem.
Yeah,
because
that's
it's,
right.
Well, it's also up to every Catholic follower, as well, to be like, we need to talk about this.
Yeah.
You
that's not true, you know?
It is. You can't, because it's, how can you just say, oh, and you look at the news and pretend that it doesn't affect you if you're Catholic?
Right.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's funny because I never, like, you're right. having a conversation and be open to having a conversation about how bad this is, irrespective of whether or not you are a perpetrator or not.
Oh, yeah.
More importantly, if you're not a perpetrator, about how this is unacceptable from a collegial level and from a follower level, like a congregation. Everyone in your congregation should be, you know, having a conversation with their priest and, you know, next Sunday, you got to go up there and start talking about this. Otherwise, I'm not going to show up. I'm not going to donate. I'm not going to...
Exactly.
You know, I'm not going to do your church functions. I'm not going to teach Sunday school or whatever. Like,
yeah.
This is unacceptable to us.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's got to start talking about it. Like, you know, I'm not a gay man, but I talk rather openly about my support of gay marriage.
Absolutely.
And gay rights.
As do I. As do a lot
of
friends of ours.
And gay love. Like, I think it's... Those are all, you know, love in whatever form, you know, is pretty special, right?
Yeah.
And mutual love, sorry, is very... And reciprocated love is very special. And just because I'm not... gay doesn't mean I can't believe that, right? And a lot of people are, like, just like that. So this is the same thing. Like, my sister and I were chatting about this the other day, and she made a flippant comment. Because we're both, you know, fairly unreligious, right?
Sure.
And the friend is like, you know what should, you know what would solve this? If they just let priests marry. You know, and you think about some of the fundamentals of that comment. You
yeah,
know,
I know.
The celibacy and no marriage.
Well, there are priests,
you know,
even saying that. Some.
It goes like...
Very few.
Frankly, I've had a 7-year stretch where I've been single. Like, it's a tough road. And you know, who knows how long it's going to be now. It's a tough road now. Like...
Yeah.
And this is, again, being kind of flippant, but kind of really thinking about this in a, you know, trying to be in a clear sense. Like if you have a job description that involves zero sex, zero ability to get married... Who are you going to attract?
Yeah.
Well, probably, like, if you, in the context of today or yesterday and, you know, years before, probably gay men.
And.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
And there's nothing wrong with, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a gay priest, but, you know, like, I just think it's kind of interesting, like, you set preconditions for employment. I'm using, very corporate employment terms, but, you know, if you set conditions for employment, and then you're shocked to realize what's happening. And not to say that, you know, gay men who become priests are predetermined to be pedophiles. That's not what I'm trying to say at all,
of course,
obviously.
Yeah.
But it's just like if you say you can't be married and you can't release yourself sexually in any way or whatever, like,
it's mind-boggling because they're infants in old men's bodies because they've never been able to be doing what natural humans do. So how can you, especially in today's world, like, I was thinking about this when I was walking my dog and I was like thinking the biggest root of this, like, all of this stuff, and this is not just pedophilia, but any problems that religion creates, and we know how many there are, but as well as the good things, but there's a lot of bad things. And the problem is Catholicism especially, it just doesn't evolve. Like, there, some followers are fine with contraception or even abortion or what, or divorce.
Premarital sex.
Another good example. Like, a lot of people are like, you know what? This is 21st century. My body naturally wants to do things. So they do that and they have no problem with it. But you're talking about the people who are the leaders of this stuff. They act like it's 2000 years ago and they've never evolved. So how are they supposed to, adapt and kind of understand the world of today? Like, they're not living like it's 2010. They're living like it's year 10. Like, that's the problem. Like, they just don't evolve compared to some other religions where it, you know, there's obviously tradition is huge, but people are allowed to live like today, you know? Like, I just don't get that.
It reminds me of a commercial. It's a cell phone commercial. I forget which carrier it's for, but they show, you know, about, you got great deals on text messaging or something, and they show a priest, he has a caller, at least an actor who looks like a priest, and says, and a great deal on text messaging. And he looks at the camera and is like, what? We text. It didn't even think about that, but like, yeah.
That's a good, I like that. It's true. It's like,
it's funny because it's referencing what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think, you know, we've outlined all the issues with that story, but it's to me, it's just mind-boggling because it seems like every week there's a new story about more abuse. And I don't think any of these guys, you know, in their big costumes and stuff and the big hats, like, they don't know how you and I live.
Right.
Like, there's no way that they can put themselves in a situation of a young child or anyone else who doesn't live like that, because they live in this bubble. Like, there's just no way they can understand how someone can be destroyed in so many ways by this kind of abuse. Like, it's the mistrust, and it's not only them, it's all their families. Like, people wonder why people become atheists and change, or even just change religions,
yeah.
Like, convert to other religions. Like, it's a no-brainer, you know?
Well, and it's, I mean, you mentioned a little bit earlier about sort of egocentrism,
mm-hmm.
and when you think about sort of the urge to keep it private, to keep it from scandal from growing, or, you know, some of the letters when priests have, you know, written to the Pope and, or whoever, and says, you know, please don't defrock me and let me live my last days or years as a priest in, you know, whatever way, or, you know.
Oh, yeah, me,
you know,
that's
live,
right,
you know,
I remember.
That sort of stuff, right?
It's unbelievable.
Like, again, it's centered around the only person impacted is the priest who's
yeah.
being accused of this. Like,
yeah.
And especially if it's true, there is the impact, like you said, of not just the boy or the girl. There's some, you know, molestation of girls that are being reported as well.
Sure.
But their families,
mm-hmm.
or when those kids grow up, what kind of relationship will they have with when people of authority, other religious figures in their lives, their potential spouses, or any of their girlfriends and boyfriends to that day,
yeah.
you know, and moving forward, like,
it just doesn't end.
It's a huge ripple effect that
yeah.
that if you are not egocentric, you can see and you can realize and you can be appalled by, hopefully. But if you're egocentric and all you're thinking about is how does this impact me, then you never see it. Or
yeah.
It doesn't come to mind. And it's...
Well, they're just... And that egocentricity, it's all of a sudden making airwaves. Like, have you seen the Welcome Back Catholics ads and stuff on American TV? Have you seen those ads?
No.
Like, CatholicsComeHome.com or something like that?
No.
Like, they're all... It's like Toyota. They're already saying, thanks for sticking with us. You know, we got some great deals for you. You know, we know you really like us. Yeah, we fucked up, but here's, you know...
Well,
they're doing the same thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They're like, you know, they're like, oh God, we gotta ramp this up because there's people, a lot of people are not liking us right now and they're leaving and we gotta get membership
right.
back and get back to the real basics, you know, and the foundations of Catholicism. Yeah, I'll find one online, reference it, yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I don't think we need to beat this to the bush too much more, but...
Oh,
I
know,
I
can.
That's okay. I'm going to write this down. Commercial, we got to find that.
Okay.
But the fact... One of the things that is coming out, too, is that the fact that reports are coming out of Germany, Ireland...
Yeah.
The Netherlands,
yeah.
or...
Everywhere.
There's a whole bunch of different countries.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, one of the arguments, at least from my understanding, has been, well, this is a very North American thing. It's the sacrilegious lifestyle out in North America that have led priests to temptation or
right.
whatever.
Sure.
So because it's not happening anywhere else. But the fact that it's happening in a whole bunch of places, at least the allocations of them, you know, kind of throws that argument out the window, which I'm kind of happy about. Like, it's you can't isolate it. It's happening. You
well,
can't, you know, argue it out by just saying it's just them. It's not just them. It's a holistic problem here. Let's face it.
Well, it's weird that it would happen a lot in states, because in some ways, because sexuality is just so taboo and off limits in the states anyway.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm not saying that European countries allow for this kind of thing to happen. I just mean that I don't know. It's there's so much more ease with showing, you know, sexuality in other countries than mm-hmm. even in the States. So
yeah, I'm thinking about Back to a Beautiful Mind. I mean, if that movie had a little bit more skin.
Oh my goodness.
I had to go there. Sorry.
But yes, we will move on. But yeah, I think we made a lot of points about that, and I think this is one that's not going to go away for a long time, and I think I have to say I'm not optimistic on whether anything's going to change. It's in the heat of the moment right now, and you know, I hope something happens beneficially for the victims some way. I don't know what they'll manage to get out of those guys.
Well, we can
we'll have to revisit.
We can only have faith.
Yeah, I know.
We only have faith. Again, I don't want to talk, but I will say this. I think the first step for a lot of things when there are disagreements and arguments around this, and this is one of those things where this is happening, and I think back to a discussion I had with my ex about, you know, if you have an argument, someone, before you can move forward, someone has to apologize, right?
Well, yeah.
And actually, and I disagreed with her, and I kind of do in a fundamental sense. Mm-hmm. I don't think the first thing is someone has to apologize. I think the first thing is you have, an apology has to come at some point, I guess.
Yeah, right.
But the first thing is you have to try to, you need that olive branch first, where you accept that the other person has a point of view that is counter to yours.
Yeah.
You know, and that hasn't happened yet. And I don't think an apology can be coming until that happens. Like, if you and I are having a huge argument, to me, my innate first thing is to try to figure out, where are you coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you disagree with me? And try to say, you know, I see that, you know, you're not crazy, but you have a point of view. And I need to accept that. I need to know. I would think you would need to know. And I would need to know that you think the same about my argument before I can even say anything of an apology that remotely is meaningful.
Right.
Right? Like, you can just say, oh, I'm sorry.
And then hope it just
goes away.
Goes away, yeah.
But saying I'm sorry needs to be grounded in something. I've thought about this a lot lately, and for a lot of reasons, but to me that was, it's a fundamental thing. Some people believe the apology has to come first, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think,
as a way to,
yeah,
just start the progress, start with the apology, and then the rest will just follow. But that doesn't really work.
Yeah, I mean, in some context, if the other person believes the exact same thing, then yes. But then again, if you both believe that, then you're pretty much waiting for the other person to apologize first, and then the apology might never come.
Well, both are waiting for the other
one.
Yeah.
So, but I think, if your first innate reaction, and you hope the Catholic Church reaction would be that, but it's obviously not showing that, is to reach out into the other person's point of view and say, you know, maybe pedophilia is wrong. Maybe covering up is wrong. And then to start from there, then people can at least have some sort of engaged dialogue and start a process. And then at some point, apology can come, right? So, I don't know, just that came to my mind,
yeah,
just now, so.
And no, it's just really shocking how stronger they're coming out against this, you know? It's almost like they just don't understand. They don't even really understand what's happening. They just seem like they have the mind of a 3-year-old. Like, they just don't really fully get what people are saying, you know?
And that's really apt, because I think you need to be really grown up and you're really sure of yourself to be able to do what I just said, which is go into your mind and your point of view and try to understand that. Because
yeah,
you're right. I mean, if you say you're a 3-year-old, I mean, it's kind of, that's the way 3-year-olds are, you know, they don't really know who they are. They can't articulate it.
They might say,
clearly.
oh, it's bad,
you know?
Okay, and not really think much beyond that.
So you need, you know, what we think needs to happen, or at least what I think needs to happen, entails a maturity and a confidence in who you are and what your faith is. And maybe
I
it seems
actually,
pretty clear, like, the Catholic Church doesn't have that, I guess.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe this is kind of ridiculous to say, but...
Oh, just say it.
I even wonder, like, this just came to me now, like, I even wonder, does he really think it's that bad? Do you know what I mean?
That's true. I don't know.
Like, the Pope or all these cardinals, these assholes, whatever, they're probably like, so, you know, a bunch of kids got touched the wrong way. Is it really that bad?
It's okay. I mean,
that's, they're, you know, almost implicating, insinuating that.
By not saying and not being very clear about that they think that's bad, you're right. Like, we don't know, actually.
They might not even think it's that big a deal.
Who knows?
Like, you know?
And that, to me, part of that step one, right? To say, you know?
Yeah.
Pedophilia is an awful, awful thing.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, anyone who does it should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law of the land.
Well, the Pope would never have a child, right? He'd never kind of put himself in that situation. But...
Yeah. So anyways, let's talk about Ahmed Karzai. I know that's the other big thing on your mind.
Yeah. You know, it's... I actually got really kind of... You know, I saw the headline. It says, Karzai threatens to join Taliban if the West essentially just doesn't let up a bit on the pressure to clean the act up of his government and their to end corruption and all this kind of stuff. So I thought, really? Like, really? Because I just started thinking of the 141 Canadians that have died so far. And I really stress this so far, because there will be more. And then, you know, the hundreds of from other countries and thousands, whatever. And I think it brought up feelings of mismanagement, like on the part of, like, NATO side. Like, they really must have no idea how this war is going. for him to come out and actually say that.
Right.
And now they're denying it, of course. Like, a couple of days have gone by, and his people are like, oh, we don't understand how that could have come out. Like, we would never say such a thing. It's like, yeah, right. So, you know, a lot of condemnation from a lot of the West countries, like our Prime Minister and President Obama, right? So I just got kind of angry, because I thought, well, 8 years, a lot of money, a lot of death. We knew that they had no plan in Afghanistan, at least till Obama got in, which was only a year ago, or a year and a half. So it's kind of like, that's a real slap in the face to the loved ones of those who have died. That's really, I mean, 8 years, and it's come to a statement like that. Like, I just think that's deplorable, really. And what does that say about our war effort? Like, why are we there? I mean, it just raises a bunch of questions, and I was just kind of horrified by that. If that's really what he said, which I don't doubt is what he said, it just goes to show that who really knows anything about what's happening over there? How can we put our trust in our leaders to send guys over, men and women over there, when that's happening? Statements like that are being made, which are pretty strong statements, right?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I read a headline of that, and I haven't read too much more about it. And I think I saw a clip of it on the news, and I can't remember if the clip they showed was him actually saying about the fact that, you know, I joined the Taliban or something. And from what I could tell, just, again, not being that well-versed in this issue, is that it was a fairly flippant remark, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that, as a flippant remark, you would say something like this, you know, it does present itself some questions about, well, what has been the result of the last, you know, 8 years. That's true. But, yeah, I don't... It's a weird one. Like I worry about whether or not it's Saddam Hussein all over again. You know, in terms of... a West-backed... regime, that ends up, you know, you created it to get rid of a monster. You've created a monster, kind of thing, and,
right?
And I don't know, but it's just you kind of think about that, like, well,
Well, and that's what a lot of people have been saying for a long time. Every time you remove someone and put someone else in, I mean, it always backfires. Like, it always seems to, anyway. So, I don't know. I was pretty, like, bothered by that. When I read that, I thought, oh my god. Like, eight... Not that I've ever really loved the Afghan war, but, like, I just got, like, oh, what's all that effort for, you know?
Right.
And, you know, the whole detainee thing just keeps going on, and in Canada here, and... So it just goes to show, like, I think maybe we've done enough over there, you know? I'm all for humanitarian things,
right.
Like funding and this and that, but really, are what, 2,000 soldiers? I don't know. It really makes me question the whole thing.
Well, speaking of humanitarian stuff, and not to change the subject, changing the subject, is that Frontline documentary about Haiti. Did you end up seeing
it?
Because I didn't see it on TV, and I ended up watching it online. PBS is one of the only American broadcasters out there where you can actually watch and stream a video, a full episode online, and it doesn't say, this is not streamable in your country. It actually will let you see
that's,
it. Right?
You can get it here.
Yeah.
Which is really telling. And that's a good, very good point to bring up. Yeah.
So I finally saw it, and as I read the article, you sent me a link about this that was coming up, and it's a good, you know... but I guess I was doing five other things on my computer at the same time, so maybe I wasn't paying attention. But I didn't think it as hard-hitting as I was hoping it was going to be. I thought it really was going to delve into the whole, you know, the media coverage of it. I mean, they talked about it for a portion of it, and then they start talking about sort of relief and what it's really looked like and the future of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, to me, one of the more interesting things on a cerebral end. I mean, when you sort of step away from it and observe what's happening, like, you know, what is it like to be someone who films a person on the lying on the street, but you don't help them, or, you know, or
right.
that reporter planes were coming in first before aid planes, and
right.
and and a whole bunch of other supplies were coming in, like food and water and stuff, which is very important, was coming in first before Band-Aids and medication and all those other stuff, which you kind of need first before you can feed someone. You gotta dress the wound, you have to... amputate, and I mean, there's no
anesthetics.
Yeah, exactly, right? So things were coming in at odd orders and stuff, and that the media focuses on the solutions, which is important. Like, you know, there's one on the National just the other day about Air Canada. Head of Air Canada seeing a story on the National and deciding, you know, I'm just going to fly in medicine and medication myself, and as Air Canada, and there's now they have this medical tent in one area, and everyone calls it the Air Canada tent because that's you know, the gurneys come from Air Canada, the medication comes from it's all Air Canada, it's not through some other funding source, it goes directly there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably one place out of 100 who doesn't have, and most of the other ones don't have the water still, don't have the painkillers, don't have, you know, amputating people without anesthetics and various different things, and this is still, you know, weeks out, where now it's not as, the attention on the media isn't there, but there's still the need, and all the stories are about solutions, but there's still massive problems that continue to this day, right? So
that was one of the main points of that program.
Yeah, so they touched on it, and I'm glad they did, but I didn't think it went, it wasn't as gruesome and as stark as I thought and when I read it. But then again, maybe because I was doing spreadsheets and stuff at the same time.
Well, you're not enveloped in it, right?
Yeah.
Because I watched it, like, I was kind of the opposite. I was very focused. I taped it and I watched it when everything was quiet and stuff. And I felt overall it was good.
Sorry, you said tape? What?
Yeah. Like, you know, with my VCR.
Did you seriously use your VCR?
No. No. The PVR.
Because you have PVR, right?
It's
okay.
2010, Justin, please.
I don't even have a working VCR, let alone a PVR.
No, we recorded it. Is that better?
Yes.
I don't know what else to say. I don't know what else I could describe it as. And, you know, the main thing about this PBS show doing this story is that it, you took away all the, any sensationalism, you took away all the bright lights and the, you know, the great thing about it really was it's undramaticness of it. The any drama you got from it was from the craziness itself. There was no Anderson Cooper in muscle shirts.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm going to have to watch this again, I think, and not be
yeah.
distracted, because that's what I'm curious about, and that's what I totally believe. Is like,
yeah, because the reporter, sorry, the reporter, I forget his name, but he would talk to Hillary Clinton, he would... So they would cut with
yeah.
quick clips with people, Bill Clinton, others,
mm-hmm.
people on the ground, and most notably, UN coordinators and people like that.
Right.
And you know, he would say, he would really be like, this is what I hear, is this really true? Like, he, almost
right.
from a skeptical point of view, and instead of him telling us the story from what he's heard, he's... We're getting it from the people we need to hear it from, like the people he's interviewing.
Right.
Like, we barely saw him. Like, that's what I like about those kind of programs.
Mm.
You notice?
Yeah.
They're like, okay, they'll show the camera following him, you know, going through this tent camp, you know, tent city. That's fine. But you rarely actually saw him on camera. You just saw the guy with the leg that just got amputated. And I was like, oh, I had to turn away. I couldn't believe what I was watching, because I was, you know, he's, the amazing thing about this one young man, he's like 16, and he was amputated below the knee somewhere without anesthesia, as we mentioned. But he was so calm. I mean, he was obviously feeling the stress inside, but he wasn't screaming. He was, you know, they're trying to unwrap, change the cloth, right? Things like that. It was amazing to see the strength in that guy's face, just being like, you know what, I'm in hell, so it's ground up, I'm looking up, you know, I'm kind of trying to just find some sort of sense in the fact that I've got a makeshift roof over my head,
right,
there's actually a doctor treating me right now, you know, you just, you try to picture yourself at that, that low level of just
right.
disparity, right?
Right.
So that's what I got out of it. You know, they casually mentioned how a lot of, you know, the anchors were there first, or
yeah.
planes, and...
I guess that's what it went, when I need to watch the whole thing again, but you're right, because they casually mentioned that, and I thought that was going to be a centerpiece of what this
as
documentary, right? And, because I find it really interesting, because I think there's a lot of complexities to it. And I was watching a Bill Maher, Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO
yeah.
Canada a little bit, and they're talking a little bit about this as well. And his argument was like, yeah, at a certain point, like, is it disaster porn? And the news are only showing it because it brings in ratings or whatever.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
And you know, and the converse of that is that, you know, you need to draw people's attention to it, because they are giving, and Americans overall give most per capita than any nation in the world.
Yeah.
And they just do.
Yeah.
And they have a huge population, so per capita also means huge volumes.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
of donations, and getting, you know, getting the stories out is needed to make that happen. You know, but, you know, so it's a complex issue. I don't think it's very one-sided, one way or the other, but,
yeah.
but I do find it really interesting, and I was hoping they would. I mean, that's why it sort of lost me a little bit. I didn't get the same impact, and I should watch it without that expectation to see that argument, but I remember the very first days thinking, why is Diane Sawyer standing there, and it's important for her to be in Port-au-Prince, or Katie Couric, or who's Brian Williams, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, and I watched the National with Peter Mansfield, she wasn't actually there, they didn't send him there, although they sent some of the reporters, but, like, you know, like, what is it to have your star anchor standing there in the middle of it all? Like, what resources needs to be in place for that to happen?
Yeah.
You know, where does Brian Williams, you know, rest his head at night when he's there? Like, and what infrastructure needs to be in place for him to be able to do that?
Oh, yeah. Because,
you know, why
obviously he's being looked after.
Like, they should, like, I would... But, of course, that's the impact, is you're right there, and in the middle of it. Like, but, you know, I would think, well, why can't they just be in the Dominican Republic,
mm-hmm.
you know, right next door,
mm-hmm.
not clogging up the airport, getting people and equipment and video cameras there, and, you know, and send your field reporters, but you need to tell the stories, and be the field reporters be out there, but, you know, a field reporter who doesn't have the same name recognition or face recognition as a Katie Couric,
right.
Probably doesn't need as much security, probably doesn't need the same kind of hotel and, you know, food and clothing needs and energy needs or whatever, you know, than the anchoring
mm-hmm.
the news there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, or even like an Anderson Cooper, right, who's kind of quasi-anchor but also quasi-field reporter, and, you know, what's the value of, you know, the value and cost of that, right? So,
well, it's weird because, you know, during the night of the telethon, the American one, we were flipping over to CNN and we saw Dr. Gupta with Anderson Cooper. You know, two known personalities on CNN. I keep thinking, it's just weird, you know, that they the way they film it, you know, they're looking on them, and then down below, there's all this crazy stuff happening, you know.
Yeah.
It's not really just directly behind them. It's just kind of below a bit, too. And I just, you know, there's a nice palm tree behind one of them, and it's the framing of it. It's the
right.
weird, you know, they're... I think Anderson Cooper really tries to, you know, really source things out, really kind of figure out what's really going on. I believe that. But, you know, like, his mother was an actress or something, right? Like
something like that, I guess.
You know, like, he comes from a more entertainment side.
Yeah.
And when I watch this, I think, you know, they're reporting, but you notice on CNN, they talk to them, they cut back commercial, cut back to them, and they're kind of just regurgitating the same shit. And then they're like, oh, and over there, and then over here, it's like, it's not really
yeah.
a new story. It's like, we get it. There's suffering. Show us something
yeah.
that we should be, other ways we
yeah.
can help, or you know.
Right, well, Jon Stewart was saying this well with Bill Moores, and one of his old broadcasts was saying, like, I think it was even the one in 2004, right? And saying, you know, politicians, and this is different, like, politicians, and so it's common with politics, right, that it was around Haiti. Obviously, it hadn't happened yet. But he said, you know, politicians have figured out the medium. Like, the White House has figured it out. Like, before, you know, when television first came out and you didn't know, people just didn't understand it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Media was, television and the medium was ahead of politicians.
Yes.
But now it's the reverse. And,
yeah.
You know, with 24 News, like an Anderson Cooper, he's got to fill 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, it's crazy.
Right? And so they don't have time to do journalism. They only have time to do reporting. So
yes.
I just found out from the White House and got this press release. The White House just announced. So they're just reporting on stuff that they're being given.
Yes.
And so I think some of that culture of that has permeated their reporting on every issue, right?
Yes.
Like it's, if you do good journalism, you should come up with answers and questions that get to why or how can we help. What's the constructive ways of being involved, or in, let's say, for Haiti, for example, as opposed to look at this dead body or this suffering here or that. Because I think it is about sort of the imagery and how much time you can fill within, how much of the 24 hours can you fill up, right? You know, that's it.
I totally agree. But it is a lot of ratings, too, like you mentioned. Like, no
yeah.
doubt about it.
Because I think... it's funny. It's like it's a rating. The visuals get you the ratings, and the confrontation gets you the ratings. Like, you know, but I think as much as sophisticated as I think the North American audience is, at the same time, we still like a good picture. Like,
oh yeah.
Like when you think about, and I complain about this a lot, but you know, when Oprah, I just lost faith in Oprah a little bit when, you know, they show Gayle King, you know, giving the new house to this family. And then he's springing the news on the husband, but they show the husband sitting there in the kitchen, and then watching her come in, and she tell him the news, and he's all shocked and surprised. Like you want to, that's the image you want of him being told, and him being shocked. But the fact that there's a camera sitting in the kitchen before Gayle comes in,
it's crap.
Like it's manufactured. I mean, that cameraman can't be invisible to the guy, to the father sitting in the kitchen. He sees this camera. He knows Gail King is in the house, and it has probably been in the house for hours.
Yeah. Setting up the
shot.
Setting
up the shot. Right? And that leads to me, was the last topic I had on my list, is the British elections that were announced yesterday.
Yes.
And on BBC World News, Channel 36, at least on my box, they have a show that came on yesterday called the Campaign Show. So they talk about day one on the campaign trail.
Oh, cool.
And it was fascinating that the... And I wish, you know, maybe it's because of more centuries more of reporting on election campaigns in Britain than we have in Canada, right? And that you can come to this brutal honesty.
Yeah.
But it's just fascinating. I want to follow this campaign a lot more closely than I ever have in any other British election. Because one, it's so close.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I hadn't really thought about paying attention to this way, about the differences. But what I thought was really fascinating is that... you know, it was a show, and then they had a reporter, a host, an anchor of this program with two, you know, newspaper reporters, and they were interviewing the energy secretary.
Okay.
The environment secretary. He's a young guy, so he's with Labour, right?
With Labour, okay.
And they showed, and they said, you know, okay, well, look at this clip, and they showed, you know, and you talk in your campaign about open, honest government and transparency. But look here, there's Gordon Brown going to, you know, this train station, and you can see everyone's starting to clap and he's shaking hands with everyone. And, I mean, tell me that was a setup. I mean, that was a photo shot, because
yes.
There's no way people are, like, those were obviously planted there. They they're activists for the Labour Party and supporters,
yeah.
And you know, don't tell me you didn't line that route with people, you know. And then the guy was kind of like, you know, whatever, you know, kind of being cheeky about it.
Sure.
And there was a bit of a cheekiness of like, yeah, you caught me, but I'm not going to say anything, you know.
Yes.
But it was like, fine, you know, and they joke about it, and he goes like, well, you know, fine, you can play coy, but you know, that was clearly a setup, and you know, that's
yes.
And then they move on, and then they still have a dialogue. But I think there's still so much fright that if you catch someone in that kind of a not a lie, but you know, you've caught gotcha, that they'll never come back. You'll lose access. Like that happens all the time with the Bush years, right? You do someone, and suddenly no one,
cut to commercial.
Yeah, no one ever comes back from the White House to your thing. And you know, George Stewart was saying again one of these old things, like, well. What do you mean you're afraid of access? You don't have any access to begin with, so why are you worried? But there's a maturity in what I was seeing in the British stuff where they can joke but be really serious because you got the point across that, you know, come on. Like, we don't want politics as usual. Just give us the straight facts.
Yeah.
What's your manifesto?
Yeah.
What's your policies on
yeah.
these things? And I mean, they still play the game. It's not exactly, it's still kind of childish in the end, but I like that the host felt confident enough that, you know, he's not going to lose access with his campaigners because he can just sort of say that, you know, and show him, say, you know, come on, that's crap, right?
It's like when a lawyer says something speculative and then the other guy goes, objecting, he goes, withdrawn, because he got it to the jury,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
well, that, Evan Solomon does the same thing.
Oh, okay.
On CBC. So his Power and Politics show,
yeah,
I'm like addicted
it.
To it.
I haven't seen it.
I've been at home. Not every afternoon.
Not every afternoon.
I've been watching. I listen to his podcast. The podcast is great.
Is it? Okay.
I would really recommend to all listeners, listen to his podcast, Power and Politics, because whatever the events of the day, by that afternoon, the political events, he gets, no matter who it is on, like Stockwell Day, Bob Ray, all the big ministers who have, you know, usually it's right after a question period in the House. Anyway... Just the other day, Hillary Clinton slapped down.
Really?
And she says the G8 thing, this maternal health thing.
Yes.
It must include...
contraceptive. Family planning.
Family planning,
yeah.
Which includes contraception and money available for abortions if need be or something like that.
Right.
I'm not phrasing it correctly, but
right.
It has to do with opening up this abortion debate.
Yes.
Which... last week, or a little bit before, this came up in Canada here about
yes.
that. Bev Oda, who I don't think comes across very well when she's in front of a microphone, and she proved it again on, right. on politics. She just spoke at this Haiti meeting that all the leaders had about how they're going to give more funding and
right.
10-year plan, whatever. She goes into our politics because Hillary Clinton just said her comment alluding the fact that we're not given the go-ahead for this abortion thing.
Right.
When we just did an about-face and the government's going to allow for contraception. So you see the ideology in our far-right government that we have, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And they've been debating it in the House for a week and a half or something.
Yeah.
So back to Evan Solomon. He brings Oda on the show. She's in New York from this thing, so it's like side-by-side kind of screen, whatever. He says, you know, Hillary Clinton said, basically, you know, she just came out with it.
Okay.
Where she says she expects the G8 nations to have this abortion funding, whatever. Oda says, he's like, what do you think of that? She's like, well, you know, we've allowed for the contraception. You know, we were going to have that as part of the plan. And he's like, well, I'm really talking about the abortion issue. Like,
right.
you know, that's what I'm getting at. He's
yeah,
saying
yeah.
to her, you know, she goes, well, we have shown that there's a lot of different ways that we can help mothers and children. And it's that stock answer
right.
that they must be trained when they go into politics. That's
yeah.
how you answer a question, to not answer the question.
Right.
And it's going to be an indirect answer. And that to me is what basically racks my brain. Like, when politicians do that, they get elected, and then they never answer questions. And every political stripe, they do this, right?
Right.
So he says, but I'm asking you about abortion. Will, as a matter of fact, will the government include, contraception you mentioned, will they include this fund for abortions? She goes, as I said, Evan, we will show that there's many different ways that... And she
right.
said the same thing.
Yeah.
And then just before they went to this other story, he said, well, I think we're grasping at straws here. And that was what made me think, when you told your story,
right.
that was kind of along the same lines.
Yeah.
Because they show her face, and she's just doing this smirk, you know, of, yeah, you got me. What do you want me to say? It's because he can't get her to say the word abortion. Like, it's
right.
like it's against... her whole being, to even say the word abortion. And that's, I hope, others in our country can do. I think Peter Mandrich does it sometimes, too.
Right.
More in a subtle way. But Evan's been way more, like, if you're going to come on my show, I'm going to come at you, right?
Right.
And I really like that. I hope he does it even more. He really presses them. He
yeah.
says, this is what I'm asking. And this is what I, yes or no, right?
You know, I'd love to, I need to find a new podcast, so this is going to be good
yeah.
with Bill Moyers. And so, you know, and that's the one thing I find frustrating about Bill Moyers is that the most of his guests end up being kind of, you know, similarly along the same
yeah.
political stripe as him.
Yeah, sure.
You have great conversation because of it, which is great.
It's more conversation.
Yeah, but I would love, but it's more, you know, conversations with people who believe the same thing.
Yes.
You know? Well, I would love, and which I still haven't done, I should go more to the Daily Show website and or the Comedy Central one here in Canada or whatever comedy network. Just like you'll watch an interview, he'll have it with John McCain was on, and
yeah,
you know,
right,
and they have talking over each other sometimes, but and you can see see the full report here, full interview here, because you know they've cut it, and he'll say you know we're gonna cut it here. But go online, we're going to keep talking now, because this is a great conversation.
Yes.
And because he's a comedian, there's a little bit more of a... more leeway to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
he gets away with it more. And so I wish Bill Moyers had more opportunities to talk to more conservative people. And so you can have that dialogue more, right? Because I think partly it's about, you know, being, I gotcha, and you come on, this is crap, right? The other part is just being respectful and saying, you know... we don't agree with each other, but let's have a conversation about it, right? So,
yeah.
And
it's not about the gotcha moments. It shouldn't
yeah.
be about that. You're right.
Yeah.
But it should be about accountable reporting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's like, I really hope you can answer my question because I'm being very clear and I want you to be clear back. And they just won't do it.
Yeah. And I, you know, I would just, instead of, like, I think the gotcha moments would be a little bit more palatable if Bev Odah just said, instead of repeating the same thing over, which gets infuriating, just say,
I just want to throw the TV.
You know, just say, sorry, Evan, you know I can't tell you. I'm not going to say. And
I'd have way more respect for that.
Yeah, I would have more respect for people who would say that, you know, I just can't tell you. Sorry.
It's like they're robots. Like, you can't... I get why people don't want to vote for in elections. I get that. Yeah. I will always vote. But I get why people don't want to. Because they see that.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I know she probably is like, baby killer, like one of those kind of people.
Right.
I don't like abortion either. Like, if anything... I'm still pro-choice, but I've moved a little more to the kind of the line between one or the other. I've moved closer to that line, I think, for me.
Yeah.
But I think most people, like, if they've got a sane mind and level head on their shoulders, would avoid abortion at all costs, right? I mean, obviously.
You know, it's really interesting. Like, I'm glad you bring this up because I know we're running long, but we haven't done one in 5 weeks, so I think we're okay.
Yeah.
You know?
And we do what we want anyway.
Yeah, we do what we want. But I've been thinking about the abortion issue quite a bit. And
yeah, sure.
I was at a party.
And we're men, so.
Yes.
I mean, for what it's worth, we're men. But
well,
go ahead.
And that's the point. That's the point
okay.
I'm just about to make.
Sorry.
And I'm, you hit it, right? The nail on the head. In that. I was talking to someone at a party and saying, you know, sometimes I don't have an opinion on something.
Yeah.
Or, like, and the woman asked me to explain it, and I said, well, and I just took abortion. Like, or the, you know, I, first of all, I said, you know, the Palestinian, the Middle East, you know, Palestinian versus Israeli conflict, and
yeah.
Frankly, I know there's a conflict, I know there's complexity in these issues, and I'm not sure where I stand in that, because I just don't know. Like, I mean, depending on what's happening, I might view more versus one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But holistically, I'm not. I don't feel like I'm informed enough to weigh in on the issue.
Yeah.
and I said, and then I said, abortion is another one, right? You know, and
it's a toughie.
And I think I'm pro-choice, but let me qualify that, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because, and I heard this, again, it was on a Bill Moyers podcast, one of the more recent ones, I can't remember which one, and when that person said what he said, and I'll say it at the end of this diatribe, that what made me crystallize my point of view on this issue. But in this party context, I said, you know, I don't know, like, a pro or anti-abortion, it, to me, is very contextual.
Yes.
Like, it's very much on the circumstance at hand. So to have a definite pro or anti, holistically, definition of where
mm-hmm.
I stand,
mm-hmm.
it's impossible because the complexities of each individual situation is vast.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I don't know. Like, I can't give you a yes or no answer on this thing. And two, by definition, I'm a man. So I'll never be faced with this issue. Like,
never
I mean,
will.
In a... I mean, if
unless you become a woman.
Unless I become a woman.
I'm kidding.
But, I mean, I can be faced and confronted it in a very personal level if somehow I knock someone up, and then it becomes a personal issue. But even then...
I like how you say that. Knock someone up.
But even then, it's personal to a point.
To a point.
Then I don't, like, a woman would have the exact same issue because it's my child and it's her child, and we would have to figure that piece out. But after that, there's still the physical thing about that it's inside a woman, and there's a woman's physicalness that I just will never know.
Yeah.
And so that additional context makes me unclear of what my stance is, and makes me... And when I started saying that, the person at the party said, you know, that's pretty humbling. That's a humble way to say that you feel that you're not equipped to give an opinion on this.
Yeah.
That's pretty, you know, she basically said it was kind of cool. I thought, well, thanks. I never thought of it as a humbling kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And so when you hear, like, Republicans, especially male Republicans, speak so firmly, I'm against abortion or whatever, and all the stuff with the healthcare debate about whether federal funding would go to abortion, you know, what rubs me the wrong way is that there's all these men talking about this. And, like,
yeah, that's
right. Who are you to actually have an opinion on this topic
in
a holistic general sense? Like, it's an impossible thing to have a holistic opinion.
Yeah.
And then what, again, this person in Bill Moyer's podcast said in the last couple of weeks, said, you know, on the abortion issue, and I'm going to quote very poorly,
mm-hmm.
he basically said, you know, pro-life, you know, the pro-life, pro-choice, whatever, it's not that clear, but choice for the woman is clear. Like, regardless of whether you are pro-life or pro-choice or, you know, or whatever, it's clear that it's the woman's decision, and whatever the woman believes has to be paramount. And so whether or not you're pro or against, you have to give the woman the choice of what they will do with their bodies and their decision, right? So saying that choice is paramount over
that argument
because it's the woman who has to ultimately decide whether or not she's pro-choice or pro-life.
Yeah, right.
Right?
And that's very true.
So I'm paraphrasing it really out of context. It was so profound when he said it. That's my opinion. I gotta go find that quote again, actually.
Yeah, I'd really like to see that, because that's really interesting, because it kind of trumps the whole thing, doesn't it? Because there will always be someone out there who will perform it. Let's just face it. There will always be somewhere on the planet an abortion doctor, even after they start killing them one by one by one. There'll be someone who will perform that abortion if the woman feels it's paramount that it happens, you know?
So if it was my situation again, and I knocked someone up, which you enjoy me saying, like, we could have a discussion, and I would probably come...
You'd want to weigh in on it.
I'd weigh in, and I'd probably give an opinion, because in this context, if it's your context and your specificness, you are allowed to have an opinion.
Yeah.
And I probably would come to that opinion and then inform the person I had knocked up with that decision. But then it would be up to her. And then I would have to be okay, whatever that decision was. And if it was the same decision I had, the same opinion I had, then that would be fine. But if it wasn't the same decision or the same opinion I had, then I would have to take it upon myself to do work with myself to somehow in the end be okay with how that was.
Right, right.
And that might take a lifetime.
Yeah, right.
That might haunt me. Who knows? Whatever that, you know, whatever that conflict is. Or it might be, you know, pretty okay, and you can together figure that out. But it's her choice and my responsibility to be okay with it.
Yeah.
Try to understand.
I think it's the only
whatever.
Way, yeah.
That's
interesting. I've never thought about it that way, but yeah.
God.
Hopefully none of us have to ever be faced with that reality, but unfortunately a lot of people are, and that's why, yeah. I know what you mean, those old Republican men that just, God, they're just so angry about everything.
Like,
you know, they really are. They're the ones who scream the loudest. They're the angry ones. Like, they're the ones who are knee-jerk reaction, very just reactive more than proactive or just thinking before speaking. I find a lot of those people are.
Let's talk about the silent majority, right? Like, because
absolutely.
When, you know, when things aren't, if you don't feel strongly one way or another,
yeah,
you kind of like whatever, you know, like it's you don't.
Palin can go to as many tea parties as she wants and read off her hands, put as many notes on her hand as she wants. But in the end, the silent majority are clear-thinking people that are like, you know what? They're going to see this president they have is going to have done more good for this country in 4 years than probably since Clinton or even before that. Like, it's... You'll see. You know.
It's funny, like, on the latest Bill Moyers, I've been re-listening to Bill Moyers quite a bit, the guy said, you know, there's, and it's, you know, one of his main theses, like, there's an allergy to reason for some reason.
I know. Yeah. Allergy to reason.
Yeah,
that
was
really
cool.
Oh, that's a good one.
But anyways, we're at an hour and 20 minutes, and before we start getting further into Sarah Palin, I think we should nip this one in the bud.
Yeah, I really did not want to actually say her name, because saying her name makes me shiver.
It's like saying Voldemort. Oh, sorry. I'm not a huge Harry Potter or Potterhead or whatever, but
no.
I do know that as part of the lore. But anyway, that was pretty good for episode 32. We got it all out of her system.
We did, and I think, we should maybe do it again before another 5 weeks rolls by.
I agree.
We can do it.
We can.
It's just 2 hours of our life, right?
I know. Well, I know I'm Photoshop, and I'm a Photoshop expert now, so I don't
need
to take another course for a while.
Give me some pointers to use it.
Well, everyone, enjoy your. Hopefully, you enjoyed the broadcast, and enjoy the rest of whatever time you have between listening to us and listening to us again.
That's right. Hopefully less time.
Yes, yeah. I'm Justin.
I'm Sean.
And we're the Dot Matrix at thedotmatrix.com.
I couldn't resist. I always think of that when you say that. I won't do that every time, don't worry.
Okay, we'll see you guys later.
Bye.